Attention all groups. This is Admiral Ackbar with your Armada advice. Don't forget that squadrons can have their attacks obstructed just like ships. While squadrons themselves don't obstruct attacks, if you hide them inside an obstacle to keep them from being engaged, and the line of sight drawn to their target crosses over that obstacle, they lose an attack die from obstruction, which might be the only one in their anti-ship battery. This obstruction will happen even if the target is in base-to-base contact with the attacker, so position your fighters with that in mind. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the fifth episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm your host, Jim. In current Armada news, I think I might have found the best minimal squadron setup for enemy squadron lockdown and disruption that the Rebels can field currently. I've been running Jan-Ors with two X-Wings and two A-Wings, and while they might not kill all the fighters they're up against, they certainly hold them up for a long time, even against much more expensive enemy builds. I suggest you Rebel players try it out and see what you think. I'd love to hear about it. This week's ship is the first I'm going to cover out of the Wave 2 ships, the MC-80. The first thing you should know about the 80 is that it's a large ship. I know, that seems like an obvious statement, but it's like larger than you think large. In a minute, I'm going to have those of you who own one, or can sub in an ISD, do some basic tasks to illustrate this, but for now, let's go over some numbers. The MC-80 has the most shields and hull of any Rebel ship, with 15 shields and 8 hull points. Those shields are pretty evenly distributed around, and with 4 engineering, it can pull 2 of them back up with just an engineering order. It focuses most of its firepower in its side arcs, throwing 6 of a combination of blue and red dice, depending on the version of MC-80 you go with. Really, it's a fair comparison to say that it's a larger, slower version of the assault frigate. It, too, is a broadsiding machine that relies heavily on shields for defense. As the first large-based Rebel ship, there's some things you should know about it. Firstly, the length of that base almost fills up the 3-width deployment zone, so your options of placing it, if it's headed into the play area, are limited. Second, when making a turn with it, the back end of it will swing very wide, so if you're thinking of flying in a tight formation, you should get some practice turns in to get a handle on how loose the caboose is, so you don't end up overlapping any of your own ships with its back end. Finally, because it's large and throws a lot of red dice out of its side arcs, you need to understand the threat area that it can project. To do this, if you have an MC-80, or an ISD, as an Imperial, you'll need to have awareness of this too. And then place the MC-80 on the left side of your deployment zone at a nice 22.5 degree angle towards the center of the play area. Now, to be clear, if 0 degrees is straight across towards the opponent's edge and 45 degrees is straight towards the right edge of the play area, 22.5 is right between those directions. Now that you've got it in place, execute a nice, easy speed 2 turn with one click to the right at each joint, so that your MC-80 is now headed roughly towards the right edge. Take out your range ruler and look at how far it can shoot with red dice. For those of you who don't own one or aren't near your collection right now, what the other people are marveling at is how the range ruler is extending well into the opponent's half of the play area. Whether you're facing it or flying it, you should have a healthy respect for the area of board control the MC-80 projects. Like a lot of ships, the temptation is to load it up with upgrades and make it into a juggernaut of some kind. But where ships like the Victory benefit from a handful of upgrades to shape it into a battlefield role, with the defenses, stats, and battery armament the MC-80 naturally has, it's already very good at whatever you task it with. Okay, maybe not maneuvering, but everything else. Plus, it comes in at a minimum of 106 points, and you're probably going to put your commander on it, so it's already a fair chunk of your fleet's change, and a high-priority, high-VP target for your opponent. When I kit out an MC-80, it's not a matter of giving it a single roll, so much as making sure it survives the game, and can also do what I need it to do in my battle plan for my list. Again, this may not require a lot of upgrades. The MC-80's primary roles on a battlefield are going to be much the same as most other large capital ships: squadron support carrier and ship destroyer. There is a third build that you can work on, which is to maximize its survivability over the other two purposes as well, and that protects your points investment. Now to that end, let's look at some upgrades you might choose for those roles. Again, keep in mind that you can overlap these roles very easily, and MC-80 can naturally run a lot of squadrons and blast away at ships. There is one decision you need to make right off the bat, though, and that's which variant you should take. The MC-80 is a rarity amongst Armada ships, in that each version has substantial differences that will affect its playstyle, much like the Nebulon B. The Command Cruiser is the cheaper version. It has 4 squadron, a blue and a black anti-squadron die, and an offensive retrofit slot. And it splits its dice evenly between blue and red, going blue heavy when there's an odd number. It's your best choice if you're going for a carrier build, and even when going for a damage build, it's preferred for me just to keep points down. The Assault Cruiser is 8 points more, and drops to 3 squadron, goes double blue on anti-squadron, drops the offensive retrofit slot for a second defensive retrofit, and goes more red-heavy on the dice, making it more potent at extreme range. I find this to be a real oddity, as the Command Carrier is the one that you'd want to keep at long range, with its squadron emphasis and less defensive emphasis, but it's the one that has a closer optimum range in both anti-ship and anti-squadron batteries than the Assault Cruiser. I only take the Assault Cruiser when I'm loading it up for a survivability build, and plan on keeping it out of the action. It might be called an Assault Cruiser, but if I'm going to try for an Akbar slash or other equally aggressive strategy, I'm likely to take the Command Cruiser. For officers, there's not a lot of bad choices depending on your build. For a carrier, I'd look at a Wing Commander or an Engineering Captain. Either of those allow you to spam a type of order and then freely switch to a different specific one you'll use. For example, if you took the Wing Commander, you could focus on engineering commands and then switch to squadron as needed, or take the engineering command, focus in on your squadrons, and switch out to engineering. MC-80s benefit greatly from nav orders to keep turning hard and switching speeds, so you could look at a navigation officer, but I don't think a carrier build is the best place for one. You should really try to just fit navigation orders and have tokens on hand organically. You can take Adar Talon to get another activation out of a squadron, but he's 10 points on an already VP-heavy high-priority target. For a shooty build, your best bet is an intel officer. If you're kitting out for pure survival, I'd run a navigation officer so you can focus on running engineering orders all the time and can swap to turn hard when you need to, or can spare an order. Walex Blissex is also a very good buy on this build, so you can burn the single brace token once and bring it back, which is helpful when all the enemy's guns inevitably turn on your MC-80. Any build will benefit from the following, though. Support officers give you a cheap, one-time version of the various Wing Commander types, or the Veteran Captain can give you an inexpensive boost at a critical juncture, and I'd hang on to it for a speed change myself. The only ones I'd steer clear of are Lando Calrissian, since that 4 points can give you a reliable support officer instead, and Leia, since it is a 3-command ship. For weapons team options, I'd probably leave this blank unless you're finding it difficult to get your MC-80 into position, you're getting pinned down a lot, or you're running an aggressive strategy. For aggressive strategies, some say you should take engine techs to get both an extra bit of distance and more maneuverability, but that's 8 points on an already expensive ship and locks me into doing nav orders or tokens a lot to get consistent use out of it. If I really felt that need, I'd put in a nav team for the extra click. Survivability builds will get some good use out of the engineering team, which allows the MC-80 to heal a hull damage and bring a shield back up, which can be crucial to lasting just one more turn. The offensive retrofit slot is only on the cheaper command cruiser, so the obvious carrier build options of hangar bays and boosted comms should be looked at. With 4 Squadron naturally and its slow speed in turning, I'd favor the boosted comms in this situation. Remember how far the 80 projected board control in the earlier demonstration? Well, that's why. Other builds might want to look at tractor beams, as the MC-80s can slow down other 80s or ISDs, possibly keeping them from ramming you for that nasty automatic hull damage, or keeping them at your preferred range for one extra turn. Defensive retrofit has the one upgrade I look at as basically an auto-include, the electronic countermeasures. ECM lets you always have that valuable brace when you really need it, and it's probably going to be the first thing your opponent spends an accuracy on. If you're running an assault cruiser and really need to put a second upgrade here, I'd go with the redundant shields. They're expensive, but getting a shield back every turn is very nice, especially in that survivability build. Advanced projectors would have been a surefire second pick before they were FAQ'd to be hard countered by XI-7s, given how many shields the MC-80 has, but unless Fantasy Flight changes their mind, I'd probably just save the points. If you're running an assault cruiser, I just skip over the ion cannon upgrades due to decreased blue dice and therefore decreased blue crits. On the command cruiser, though, they're much the same as what I outlined on a VSD, although on a VSD carrier build, I said not to take anything. On an MC-80, a well-chosen ion cannon or turbo laser upgrade can make it a very effective hybrid build. To that end, my picks here in order of preference are the SW-7 ion cannons. They don't cost a crit to use and are nice and cheap with solid flexibility. NK-7 ions. These are expensive, and I would probably think twice about putting both them and a turbo laser upgrade on, but especially when paired with an intel officer, you can really force an opponent to start dropping defense tokens fast or take a ton of damage. Ion cannon batteries, they're also cheap, and with a solid crit effect that should always come in handy, either for shields or tokens. Leading shots. It's the cheapest, and gives insurance that your big ship's big rolls will come out more towards average. And it's also the only ion upgrade I'd consider taking on the assault cruiser to even out all the unreliable red dice. And finally, I'd skip Overload Pulse entirely, as both being too many points for an effect that doesn't immediately help, as well as preferring to put the pulse on another ship that sets a target up for an MC-80 to just wallop it. Though, if you're running a 2-MC-80 build, this could be considered, but there are better, more consistent upgrades you could purchase instead. Turbo lasers are one of your best upgrade slots on an MC-80. Point for point, they're going to get the most work done for you, and are even good to put on a carrier or survival build. The undisputed ruler of the roost here is the XI-7. The MC-80 can be counted on to put out at least one accuracy with each broadside shot, and broadsides are really what you should always be doing. And they can lock down braces, and the XI-7s take care of the redirects. You could take heavy turbo lasers instead, and they might do just as well on a red-centric assault cruiser, but I'd stick with XI-7s if you can. There's only one other that I'd look at, and that's the XX-9s, but only if I was running a Dodonna list. Being able to focus the huge hit an MC-80 brings to bear is better than getting 2 face-ups. However, with Dodonna in the mix, I can see the second or third volley against a larger ship, where you're getting down to its hull, paying for itself with those targeted double crit effects. Other options are either complete wastes, like turbo laser reroutes. They're inefficient and pricey, like the enhanced armaments. They're too limiting, like slave turrets, or you'll probably never even use them, like the H9s, so just skip them. Finally, we get to titles, and you should almost always take one of these. If you're really hard up for points and taking a carrier build with fast squadrons, you could leave this slot alone, but otherwise, they're just behind electronic countermeasures on the automatic inclusion list. Carrier builds with slow squadrons like B-Wings and YT-1300s will get the best boost from the Independence title, even though Y and X-Wings will get a little nudge from it. If you're not going to get much out of Independence, then either of the other titles will give you bang for your buck, because you're always going to be shooting at something. Now, which one to take is purely situational. Home 1 is good for lists where you've got a lot of other ships in it, especially if they're MC-30s that would have trouble getting accuracies on their own. The option of the guaranteed accuracy is a powerful one, but I personally like the Defiance title more. It shines in lists that have fewer ships in them, but also when you really want that 2-point cost difference for something else. It's also very good if you plan on going second, since there's always going to be a ship that's already activated. Between the slightly reduced cost and being able to throw a black die at long to medium range, it's my go-to title for just about any MC-80 build. It also combos well with leading shots to cheaply ensure you're going to get the best effect from that additional, and let's be honest, it's going to be black, die. Plus, they're both cheap. So, now that I've talked about various upgrades for builds, I want to reiterate and clarify what I said previously. The MC-80 is good at things already, so you don't have to load it up. It's also very easily hybridized between builds. Making a ship that's good at both squadron support and blowing up other ships is super easy with the MC-80. Here's an example of a good all-rounder ship I'd take. I start with the command cruiser, and I just take ECMs, boosted comms, XI-7s, and then season with a title using the reasoning that I laid out previously. I then have a 4-squadron carrier with good control range, a reliable brace token, and serious punch. Then I can add on the title to make it even better at one of those things. Depending on the title, that ship comes in at between 128 and 131 points, so it doesn't break the bank either. Plus, you can even drop the boosted comms to add on an ion cannon upgrade, and it will still have a 4-squadron stat to get your fighters into position, barely affecting it as a carrier. When using the MC-80, your initial deployment of it is going to be key for the rest of the battle. Since it's slow and turns poorly, it's not going to be able to react to changing conditions on the battlefield as well as other rebel ships, so you need to make a plan before you put it on the table and know that you're locked into that plan with only slight variations. Some talk about the Akbar slash and going right up the middle of an enemy fleet with both broadsides blazing, but in practice, your ship won't last long against firepower of the magnitude that will come back at it. While it's not impossible to pull off, it's definitely against the idea of weight of firepower. You're allowing your opponent to focus on your expensive ship while splitting your own weight. You'll need proper support from other ships to clear out one of the sides as quickly as possible to limit the return shots and keep the MC-80 afloat. Mostly, you'll want to keep it on the outside of a battle, arcing slowly around the center of the fight and firing that devastating broadside at choice targets. Something to remember is that the outside of the fight isn't necessarily going to be along just the short edges of the board. The MC-80 can very readily be positioned along your own table edge and still contribute a lot to the battle. As a bonus, deploying sideways can throw an opponent off a little bit. You'll definitely want to have your plan starting to form in your head when you start placing terrain too, as the MC-80 will not be dodging around any asteroids, and could even spend 2 turns going over obstacles due to slow speed and the length of its base. Obviously, this isn't an issue with the space station, but it can be deadly for the other types. There are 2 things that MC-80s need to watch out for, and you'll learn these lessons fast if you don't adequately prepare for them. First, the major vulnerability of the MC-80 is being stopped. If your opponent can throw a ship into its front arc before the broadsides can be brought to bear on the enemy, your big hitter is going to sit idle for at least a couple of turns, which can swing the tide of the battle. The front arc is also a good spot because the MC-80 only throws 3 dice out of that arc, plus shooting at whatever you're bumping into will stop you from using Admiral Akbar if that's your commander. I highly recommend using an escort for this reason, something to either prevent this or to add firepower to killing anything getting in the way. Ideally, this would be another ship, something to follow along behind to leave no exploitable gap, or position such that it can fire at a blocking target as well, but a couple of B-wing squadrons can work in a pinch. The second vulnerability, and somewhat corollary to the first, is effects that cause you to take straight hull damage. The MC-80 is all about its shields. It has relatively few hull points for how expensive it is, so any effect that bypasses shields is very bad news for you. Whether that's an asteroid field, assault proton torpedoes, or overlapping a ship. The previously mentioned front arc ram is doubly horrible for you. It's not only hard to dislodge, but if both ships overlap in a round, that's 25% of your hull gone every round it happens. Remember, too, that the size of the base can mean that you'll spend two turns going over an obstacle. So if you have an opponent stop your ship on top of an asteroid field, your MC-80 isn't going to last very long, no matter how many shields it has. Additionally, keep a careful eye on ships that have tractor beams on them. You're likely going to need to have a few more nav orders than you might normally run when facing them, since banking a token to change speed won't be effective when the Q7s start flying, and not being able to change speeds because your token vanished can put you into a very bad position. MC-80s work especially well with Admiral Ackbar, but they're just fine with any other commander that isn't Mon Mothma. I enjoy using one with General Riken, as having one last volley with those enormous sides makes me feel all warm and squishy inside. Overall, the MC-80 is unlike other Rebel ships, as it's slow and unwieldy, but still has the strong side arcs most Rebel ships enjoy. It's got some real vulnerabilities and costs quite a few points, but with proper support and deployment, it can put some real hurt on your opponent. Just don't overestimate its endurance, and don't overload it with upgrades either, or you'll just be giving the enemy a high-priority present of victory points. After the break, it'll be time for TIEs, in this case, the Interceptor. When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com. We're back! It's time for Squadrons. In this episode, it's the TIE Interceptor. The Interceptor is a fighter that does exactly what's on the tin. It intercepts. This is no exception to the Imperial rule of TIEs being very single role, and it excels at dogfighting, equal only to the X-Wing and only matched by non-TIEs on the Imperial side. It doesn't have a lot of staying power with only 3 hull points, though, so you're not going to hold on to an engaged fighter for very long. The Interceptor is blazingly fast, though, able to leap across the board and pin enemy fighters in place almost before they can get out of their starting gates. Because of this, they benefit heavily from a squadron command, which plays to their twin strengths of speed and firepower, hitting enemy squadrons far away from your ships and whittling them down with an overwhelming alpha strike. If they don't get an alpha strike in, they're highly vulnerable to being torn apart by enemy fighters, squandering their potential. So place them well out of reach of an opponent until you're ready to strike. Counter is a very nice ability, and it will make your opponent pay for attacking them. Interceptors are highly likely to go down in 1 to 2 shots, though, so counter isn't going to wipe out the enemy by itself. What it will do is allow other interceptors to eliminate enemy fighters more easily. So as you might have guessed, TIE interceptors are like TIE fighters and work best in swarms. They even have that ability. I find interceptors are best used in Wave 2 in 1 to 2 groups of 2 to 3 squadrons each, mostly as speed bumps. They're too expensive and can't hit ships very well to take more of, though 50-50 isn't bad, unless all you're looking for is a way to slow down enemy squadrons. In either role, they will excel. With 4 dice, swarm, and counter, they're going to soften up anything you send them after to lock down, while behind them, your slower squadrons and bomber wings will get into position. They pair well with Howl Runner or Flight Controllers, which gives them a mighty 5th die. Give them both, and watch X-Wings, Y-Wings, and YT-1300s evaporate under 6 dice with a reroll attacks. They can get some mileage out of the intel abilities so they can fly out and engage other squadrons that might have gotten loose, but unless you're giving them a squadron order again to do that, they're back to being speed bumps again. It's Dengar's ability to increase their counter that works really well with them. Suddenly, they're hitting back with almost as many dice as they attack with, and probably finishing off almost anything they've engaged, as long as they've hit it first. The Interceptor has one ace, Soontir Fell. Soontir's ability is that if your enemy shoots something that isn't him, they'll take a damage. His stat line isn't any different from a vanilla Interceptor, with the addition of a Brace and Scatter, so he's still very fragile with only 3 hull points. The idea behind it is that your opponent has the choice of either hitting an easier target, hoping to kill it and just taking the fell damage, or focusing more resources into Soontir and having to deal with his defenses and his counter. So, do they take the automatic damage, or gamble on trying to kill him quickly? The problem I find with that idea is that most squadrons roll blue dice, and at any quantity, they're probably going to roll an accuracy, which is all you need to lock down that scatter and start knocking off his HP. If they get 2, they'll lock both defenses down and possibly knock out 2/3 of his health in one go. Because of his fragility, Soontir synergizes best with Tie Advanced, who will force your opponent to not hit him and suffer his damage, while he can use his glass cannon firepower to the best effect. Without an escort to protect him and give his ability a chance to shine, I find Soontir works best with a small group of interceptors as a kind of bully. Fly them in against an even smaller group of enemy squadrons, ideally where the enemy can't muster much in the way of anti-squadron firepower, and then pick them apart with a combination of counter, huge dice pools, and Fell's ability. Since it'll probably be flying off on its own, an ideal example of this would be to hit the Millennium Falcon with this tactic. It's a high victory point target that can only hit one ship at a time while the others pull it down. TIE Interceptors are an expensive ship, compared to other TIEs at least, but they can be used mostly unsupported in a role of speed bumping or locking down enemy squadrons in less than ideal positions with only a squadron order. Yes, they'll be blown apart eventually, but remember that even if you only hold the enemy up for a round or two, that's a round or two that they aren't wreaking havoc with anti-ship bombing runs. With speed, counter, and a lot of blue dice, they disrupt an opponent's squadron plan pretty easily. Just always make sure you get in the first punch with them, or they might fold too quickly to make much difference. Well, that's all for this week. Next time, it's back to Wave 1 with the Imperial Gladiator and the Rebels' old mule of a fighter, the Y-Wing. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Anything to add, Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or email me at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. Please rate the show on iTunes and Stitcher. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.